Welcome aboard. I'm Brad.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Scott. Welcome to My Ship Story Podcast.
This is a podcast where we invite crew members, both past and present, to tell their stories about life at sea.
So come up to the pool bar and grab a drink.
Sit back, relax, because it's time for
My Ship Story. God, that was terrible.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of My Ship Story Podcast. I'm your host, Brad. Got with me, Scott. Eric is absent today, but he has a very good reason, so we're going to let that slide.
Drunk
on him today.
Passed out.
It would be nice to have Eric on here, because I think he was really, really interested in what we're going to talk about, because this place that we're going to talk about is on his bucket list. So, let's just get started. So, Scott, have you ever been to the Galapagos Islands?
Nope. Just watching one of our friends as he travels around the world, and one of his stops was the Galapagos Islands and stuff, and seeing all of the Richard Attenborough and the, you know, all of the films and stuff about the Galapagos Islands and the turtles and the everything.
I think they're tortoises, they're both, not turtles.
Terrapins? Is it a terrapin or tortoise or a turtle?
Fernando, this is a long-running painful joke that we do. But yeah, there's also blue-footed boobies there, Scott.
Now, I just wanted
to get that in.
Yes, a blue-footed booby.
Yeah.
That might be fun. But I'll pay extra for that.
Well, but a place that I have always really, really been interested, really want to go, never been there. Cruise lines don't normally go there. I think maybe a few here and there, but
well,
not a regular.
Well, it's because it's so protected, though.
Yeah, a lot of protection. But hey, we're going to hear all about this from a guy who knows it all. I would assume so. But anyway, welcome to the podcast, Fernando Diaz. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet
and,
you.
Yeah. And so, Fernando, you run a cruise line that goes to the Galapagos Islands.
Yes. It's a family-owned company. It was actually started by my two parents back in 1986. We're second generation. And when I say we, it's my two brothers and I. I have an older brother and a younger brother. The three of us are running this great small ship, rather intimate ship, cruise company called Quasar Expeditions. And it's very small boats, only 16 guests on the Grace, and then 32 guests on the Evolution. So quite different from what most people, you know, when most people think of cruises, they think of the large ships, right? 500, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. That does not exist in Galapagos. Actually, the largest size of boat in the islands is only for 100 passengers. And it's precisely because of what you said, Scott. They're so protected that just the large cruise ships, it would be impossible to disembark in the visitor sites and things like that. So
can you imagine like the Icon of the Seas with 9,000 people and the largest ship in the world coming up? Or it probably can't even get into the islands, or the anchor drag would just annihilate everything.
Yeah, exactly. There is, for example, an island called Genovesa or Tower Island, and the ships anchor inside a submerged volcanic caldera. So it's essentially a volcano that is almost entirely submerged. So you can still see the entire ring, except one part, probably the part when the eruption, you know, that collapsed, water went in, and the ships actually anchor inside that crater. So it's fantastic, but it's there isn't much depth coming into the crater. So you need these small ships to be able to get in there.
Huh. Wow, that's fascinating.
And once you get into the crater, is it like super deep?
Yes.
Kind of like Santorini, you know, it's really, really deep anchor right there. But so if somebody's going to take a cruise, where do they fly into?
The Galapagos Islands belong to the country of Ecuador, and there are no international flights going straight to the Galapagos. So you first have to fly into either the capital of Ecuador, which is Quito. That's actually my hometown, where I'm from, where my whole family's from. They're all actually back there. Or the coastal city of Guayaquil. Quito is actually the highlands and the mountains. From there, you normally need to spend about a night at least And then you take a short flight, about an hour and a half, to the Galapagos Islands. And from there, the cruises start. So the, unlike most cruising destinations, they don't start from the mainland and go out to visit the islands. You actually start and end in the Galapagos Islands, and you have to fly there to begin and end your cruise.
Okay. I was wondering about that, if they joined in the mainland and then cruised out there, but you fly out there and you just do a cruise right there in the islands.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And where are you from again? What island?
I'm from from Quito, Ecuador, the capital of Ecuador.
Oh, okay.
And the Galapagos, yeah, they belong to. But I spent a lot of my childhood in Puerto Llora, which is in the island of Santa Cruz. It's the main port town. That's where we have our offices.
Oh, okay.
That's where I, yeah. So I was, you can say.
That's just across from Tortuga Bay. Tortuga Bay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm just, if I'm looking down, I'm actually looking on Google Maps to look at it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tortuga Bay is a beautiful beach.
Yeah, Scott does a lot of research ahead of time when we do these programs.
I was looking for the crater that you were talking about, just to.
Oh yeah, if you gotta zoom out on Galapagos, it's one of the northernmost islands. So if you go to Wolf and Darwin, you've gone too far. It's the island right before that. It's called, you should see like Tower or Genovesa, and if you have a computer in front of you, just type Genovesa Island and you will see photos of this crater. It's like a James Bond sort of like secret submarine base. And it's also called the Island of Birds because it has so many different species there, including the blue-footed booby that you mentioned. It also has red-footed boobies and the Nazca boobies. So the three booby types that you find in Galapagos, they're all on that island.
Oh, I see it now. On Island Genovesa, it's a Great Darwin Bay.
Yeah, exactly. And Darwin Bay. And it's really cool to snorkel inside that caldera just because, you know, obviously you have the walls, which are part of the crater. They're full of life, marine life, smaller tropical fish. And then you have the big fish, including, you know, like manta rays, sharks, sometimes whales inside the crater.
Now, what about Lake Arcturus?
Yeah, you can't actually get to that lake. It's not an open visitor site. So it's only scientists can do research around that area. And that's actually the reality for most of the Galapagos National Park. 3% of the Galapagos is inhabited, of the area of the Galapagos Islands, and then 97% belongs to the national park. There are no towns. You've got to be on shore the earliest 6 a.m. and the latest 6 p.m. and you have to be off the park. So if you're not doing research, that's the only time when you're actually allowed to visit these places. So most of these areas are intact, and then the visitor sites are actually quite small. So I would say that, you know, of that 97%, at least 90% is off limit for tourists just for science. So they discovered like a new iguana species only a few years ago, just because, you know, the tourists only frequent a very small part of Galapagos.
That is so fascinating. I'm so glad that happened because, you know, because if they gave access to any sort of tourist, there would be condos and beaches and huts and shopping and, you know, cruise liners, maybe not giant, but, you know, that would, people would drag themselves in there.
Yeah, you answered one of the questions I was really going to ask about how populated it is and how many people could go on and that kind of stuff. So it sounds like actually cruising is kind of ideal for this. You go ashore during the day and then you have to be back on the ship or the boat in the evening. You know, you come back, you have your meals, I guess, and whatever. And then, you know, you rest and you can go back out. I'm assuming the ship would sail to another port or anchorage during the night, and then you're waking up in a different place.
Exactly. There are actually two ways to see the Galapagos. One is they call it island hopping, where you stay in one of the port towns in a hotel and you take these day boats to the nearby visitor sites. The Galapagos, you know, the islands are very far apart from each other. Some of the navigations that we do on our cruises at night are like 13, 14 hours long. So when you stay at the port towns, you can only visit the visitor sites that are very close to the port towns. And by default, these are the most visitor, right? Even by, at the time before tourism, you know, the pirates or the whalers, they would get to these port towns and they would frequent the visitor sites around that. So the wildlife around the port towns is not the best. Now, when you go to islands like Genovesa that we were just talking about, or Fernandina, far on the west, that's where the magic is. You know, the island's completely untouched, ton of wildlife. This is true for all of Galapagos, but particularly in these remote islands, that's where the species, you know, they have absolutely no fear of humans. You, if it were allowed, you cannot touch any of the species. You actually have to stay, I believe it's 2 meters, so about 6 feet. But if it were allowed, you could pick up the birds, you could pick up the sea lions, you could pick up the iguanas, you could pet every animal in Galapagos.
So I mean, what if you're like, you're over there and you step foot on it and some, you know, like say this iguana that was just been a species that's just been discovered, you know, a year ago, comes up to you and you're like, back off, back off, back off. And it's like, no, what are you? What are you? Like, are you supposed to run from it? Or it's like, I can't.
It happens.
You.
Exactly. You got to back off. It happens a lot. Actually, when people are sunbathing on the beaches, the sea lions will just come and kick you out of your own towel. They'll lay in your towel. You can't do anything. And then you just got to wait for the sea lion to go away. And just you're left with a smelly fish towel. and that's it, you know, and the animals are all like that. It's incredible. Like even underwater, you know, when you're snorkeling, the penguins, the fish, the sea turtles, they won't move because of your presence. They never learn to fear human. And I think that's the magical thing about the Galapagos. You know, Ecuador is a third world country and there are a lot of things that are not okay and that are not done right. But if there's one thing that Ecuadorians are very proud of is the Galapagos National Park and the way we've been able to keep these islands pristine for so many years.
It really sounds like, and I mentioned this before, but it really sounds like taking these cruises is a really good way to visit the Galapagos, because you don't have the hassle of going from these visitor centers off to these remote islands. You don't have to do that yourself. You don't have to hassle getting out there. You can, the boat does it for you.
And which is, you know, the reason why, how we designed our itineraries, most of the navigations happen like at night or like, for example, when you're on board and you're having lunch. So we waste very little time. You're actually, you know, when you think of cruising, a lot of time spent like on the balcony of your cabin, just looking out at the sea as you're navigating from one point to another. In Galapagos, it's almost always, you're almost always exploring on shore. These are expedition cruises. But at night, we're almost always navigating. And as I said, you know, 6 hour to up to, you know, 14, 15 hour navigations where you depart right before dinner and you arrive like right at breakfast. But the magic of that is you wake up in a new visitor site, a new island each day, seeing new things. The oldest islands in Galapagos are literally days old. You know, if we're talking about volcanic eruptions, the last one was only a week ago, and there's still lava flowing. So that island is still forming. But then there are islands that haven't been active for over four million years. But the same species have evolved very differently from one island to the other. So Galapagos is famous for evolution. And to really see evolution at work, you got to get on a cruise and, you know, go around the entire archipelago and just see with your own eyes how the exact same species that came from the mainland is so different in the new islands from the very old islands, because it had just so much more time to adapt.
Yeah, that's kind of what sparked it for Darwin, right? He's like, whoa, what's going on here? These islands are kind of close, but they're far enough away that these different species developed differently.
Exactly. And he noticed that specifically with the finches. You know, the theory is obviously one species of finch that is commonly found in the coast of Ecuador, Peru, or Colombia flew to the Galapagos, and it had a beak shaped in a very specific way. So it arrived to one island, and that beak perhaps was okay for that. And then, you know, it reproduced and flew to a different island. But that beak that was short maybe, you know, didn't serve the purpose to like pick worms from holes in trees. The finches from that family that were born with slightly longer beaks, they adapted better. They ate more. That variation, you know, reproduced and survived better. And so each island has a finch with a different shape of a beak. They all originated from the same one, but they adapted. And you have, I believe it's 16 species of finches, all with different beaks, from very short and, you know, strong beaks to break seeds, to like very, very long beaks to just like pick worms and parasites from trees and from animals. And it's crazy. And Darwin noticed this. And the same thing with the giant tortoises, that their saddles, or the, you know, their shells are in very different shapes, because some got their food from the ground and some from the trees. So the ones that got it from the trees, they had to stretch their neck so that they have a saddle shape on the back, whereas the ones that got it from the ground have a dome shape because they have no need to stretch their necks up. And it's incredible, you know, each different island, depending on the vegetation and everything, will have a species that adapted from. And the cool thing about taking a cruise is you get to see that with your own eyes.
Are there land turtles?
So the ones on land are called tortoises. And then you have the ones when you're snorkeling, it's the Pacific green sea turtle. That's right. The ones in the ocean are turtles, and the ones on land are tortoises.
So I'm trying to think where this one is, but it's the tortoise.
I've been trying to explain this to these guys for years now.
No, but I think it's the Galapagos tortoise. His name is Bob or something like that, but it's still alive, and it's like a 180-year-old tortoise.
Are you referring to Lonesome George?
Maybe.
So Lonesome George he wasn't the oldest, but he was the last of his species, and he died, I would say, I think like 8 or 10 years ago. So maybe not that one, but there is another tortoise in Galapagos that they've dated. I believe it's 180 years old. So some of these, they didn't quite meet Darwin, but maybe, you know, their parents did. But yeah, it's a species that it's incredibly, they live forever, and they can survive without food or water for an entire year, which is why when the pirates and whalers visited Galapagos, tortoises were the best thing they could bring on the ship, right? They wouldn't need to give them food or water for an entire year, and they had fresh meat. That's why they all basically decimated the population of tortoises in many islands, because it was just, you know, the perfect animal to have on board.
Well, that's a whole nother type of fasting.
Yeah. Hey, let's get back to the cruising aspect of it though. So about how long do these cruises last? Like do you have an average cruise, or do you vary?
Yeah. So every cruise company has a cruise itinerary that's set by the Galapagos National Park, all right? And they are 15 days long. The Galapagos National Park designed the itineraries this way so that you can only visit the same visitor site every 15 days. And this really decompressed the congested visitor sites, especially the more popular ones. We, as Quasar, since 1986, have only offered week-long cruises, 7 nights, 8 days. We believe that is the minimum amount of time required for somebody to really get a taste of the Galapagos. You know, we talked about just the difference of species between the islands that are new and the ones that are 4 million years old. And to really see these at work, to really go from north to south or east to west, need the full week. So that is the itinerary for us that is at least most popular. Now, if there's somebody without time constraints and or budget constraints, and they can do the 2-week itinerary, that's like paradise. You see everything. You maximize your chances to see all the iconic wildlife that's famous for the Galapagos. The Galapagos is famous for these chance encounters. You know, you can be in the same strait today and see orcas, you know, feeding on mobula, and be there tomorrow and see nothing. So obviously the more time you spend in Galapagos, the better your chances of seeing these amazing things.
So back-to-back cruising is the way to go.
That is the way to go.
I think I should inject here, Fernando, that I'm actually a filmmaker, and I think because Brad is, Eric is not here, I think you should have Brad and I come down. He could be my sound guy, and we'll just make a commercial for you, make a small movie for you. Sorry, Eric.
You guys are more than welcome. And the cool thing about Galapagos is because the animals don't move, as we said, they're not afraid of you. You can get by with very basic equipment and take, you know, photos and videos that look like something out of National Geographic.
Oh my God.
Did you ever, like in your younger days, did you ever work on board the boats doing anything?
I did. I originally wanted to become a naturalist guide, but my parents, seeing what the life around being a naturalist guide in the Galapagos was like, they said, maybe this is not for you. Life can be difficult. There are issues with the younger guys, you know, as they start in these careers with drugs, alcohol, and that's common. They unfortunately saw it quite a bit, even with some of our best guides. So it took us a while to really get with a pool of guys that was, you know, very responsible and mature enough to do this. And, you know, when they saw all these things, they sort of dissuaded me from becoming a naturalist guide. But I did work on the ships, sometimes bartending, cabin boys, helping the cruise director. I was fortunate enough, Sports Illustrated did a swimsuit edition in the Galapagos when I was 17. And somehow I convinced my parents to let me go on that cruise. And that was nice.
Well, it sounds like naturalists have the same problem that people that work on cruise ships did with drugs and alcohol. That's kind of our wheelhouse.
Alcohol, no drugs. Never take it. Well, let me ask you. So you said cruise director and cabin steward and bartender and stuff. So and now I'm listening to that, and then I'm remembering you said, you know, one boat had 20 people, the big one, and the other one had, like, you know, 15, 16, 18 people. Well, how is that? Like, is there a type of cruise itinerary on board as far as shows, cruise director, cocktail hour? Like, what do you do on a ship, on a boat that small?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a great question. The first thing is, you know, these are expedition cruises, which means people are up very early. You know, 6:30 a.m. That's when the wildlife is most active in the Galapagos. You're snorkeling all day, hiking, kayaking, paddleboarding. So when, you know, after dinner, people are pretty worn out. I would say, you know, if you compare bar consumption in other destinations to Galapagos is very low, just because people need that rest to go. However, we certainly have, you know, like happy hour and things like that. There is no nightly entertainment like with the big cruise ships. We do have like movie nights, or we have nightly lectures, of course, every night, like hour-long lectures from the naturalist guides on, you know, geology, the islands, the visitor sites are going to see specific species. But it's very much expedition and science oriented. So not so much of that entertainment that you normally find on cruise ships.
Huh. Well, that brings me to another question. So you mentioned guides. So does everyone have to go out on a guided tour, or is it possible to just go out on your own and tool around, or does somebody need to be watching you?
Yeah. So that beach you mentioned, Scott, earlier, Tortuga Bay, is one of the few places you can actually go on your own because it's outside of the national park. Every visitor site inside of the national park, the rule is you have to be accompanied by a certified national park guide. So on our ships, we have two guides on each of our ships. The Grace actually has one of the smallest guide to guest ratio of any ship in Galapagos. So it's for every 8 guests, there's one guide. This gives you a lot of time to interact, ask questions, really get one-on-one with the guide and just, you know, learn or participate with them in the activities. In general, the Galapagos is very difficult to see it without one of these plant tours. So you can go on your own and stay at one of the hotels and actually visit some of these places, but the places outside of the national park, that's not where the cool animals are, where the great things happen. It's always inside of the national park.
But if you're a passenger on your cruise, you're almost always with a guide.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. You're basically always, every time you're on the islands, you disembark with a guide and the group stays with the guide, and they're there to make sure, you know, you don't touch the animals. Part of the reason the animals, you know, the Galapagos National Park was established in 1957, I believe. And the reason why, you know, 70, 80 years later, they continue to be unafraid of humans is because there has been this control, right? Mm-hmm. If people were allowed to roam freely and do whatever they want, which is what my mother did and why she fell in love with the Galapagos. She was actually, she went to the Galapagos when she was 16, when there was no tourism, there were no guides, there were no trails. The Galapagos National Park had just been established, and she got to do this for herself. But she quickly realized that if there is no control, the things you could do would really scare the wildlife. And then it would be just another destination where every animal runs from you the moment you disembark.
Now, I can't remember where it was. Brad, do you remember where Shell Hall was? I think it was it's where they filmed the Blue Lagoon, Brooke Shields. And I think it was like in Nassau or part of Nassau. But in that, because it was protected, does the Galapagos have that same protections where they don't allow, like, you can't have sunscreen, you can't wear tan lotion, you can't stuff like that that'll mess with the ecosystem?
Yep, exactly. So we have to use very specific amenities on board our ships, all biodegradable. You have to use very specific reef safe suntan lotion or sunblock. You can't wear very specific types of like insect repellent. So yes, it's full of that. And we, you know, single use plastics, at least on our operations, are completely banned. You can't eat on the islands or smoke. You can only drink water. And, you know, the birds actually, because over the years, some people have given them fresh water. Fresh water is actually very scarce in some of the islands in Galapagos. So the birds, the mockingbirds, especially when you open a water bottle, they know that's fresh water and they'll jump on your shoulder. They're asking you for it. And it's so tempting to just, you know, put it in the cap and give it some water.
And you can't do that.
You can't do that. You would be doing them a big disfavor if you do.
Now, on that, what happens if you do? Other than, you know, so, hey, you guys got to quit that. Like, what's the...
Have you ever had to kick anybody out?
Yes. Unfortunately, yes. We had... it was a charter from... It was a group from China. And it's US. Basically... No. Americans are actually really good. We love American tourists. At least the ones that come to on our ships, they're just really good about it. They educated. They do a lot of research. They go for the right reasons to the Galapagos. You know, it's not for checking it off their bucket list and just taking photos. They have been interested in Galapagos since they heard about them in their biology class. That's one of the most common things we hear. But, you know, going back to your question, it was this group from China, and it's all kind of like a cultural thing. They really wanted to eat everything that they saw, because in China, they do actually eat the sea turtles and things like that. And they would, when they were snorkeling, grab onto the sea turtles, and a sea turtle is powerful. You basically surfing on that thing. And they thought that was really funny and interesting and entertaining, and they would not stop doing that. And our guide had to basically stop the cruise, and we had to disembark them in the next port. And obviously there was a huge discussion with the travel agency, why we kicked them off. But we explained that, you know, that kind of behavior and, you know, some things that happen, you know, it happens. Like sometimes a sea lion pup will just go and start sniffing your foot, and some people, you know, just slightly pet it, and you'll get, you know, slightly reprimanded by the guide, and quickly you learn to keep your distance. But that's what the guides are there for. You know, of course, our guides are not mean to you in any way. They know that this is very odd for most people, you know, that wildlife approaches you, and some of these are very cute, and so you want to pet them. But
I thought you were going to say when they were trying to surf on the sea turtles, they were trying to catch it and bring it back so they could, because you were saying that they'd like to eat everything. I was like, please, please don't even say that they're trying to get this back to the boat so we can try sea turtle.
If that was allowed, I bet you they would have done that. And I remember when I went to a trade show in China, I wanted to stay to get the local experience, and I stayed at a local hotel, not a Marriott or an international chain. And they had these big fish tanks with turtles in them. And they were taking them out one morning for soup. And I just, you know, I didn't speak the language. I just told the guy, it's like, you're taking them out to eat. And he's like, yes, we eat very good. And so it's a cultural thing. It wasn't, you know, that they were there just like being completely like obnoxious and disobedient. It was they weren't given the right expectations, or they weren't educated properly before coming to the island. So we make sure that at least when we talk to guests or when we have travel agents book our products, that they're well educated about the Galapagos, you know, what you can and cannot do, so that people come with the right expectations. Mm-hmm. Some people come with completely wrong expectations and they have a terrible time in Galapagos because they were expecting, you know, to just lounge on a beach in the equator and see a volcanic eruption. And
is there anything that's like stands out to you? It's like, if you come down here, you've got to see this.
My favorite island is Fernandina. Nothing to do with the fact that my name is Fernando and sounds similar. It's the westernmost island in the Galapagos. And the Galapagos are bathed by the Humboldt Current. And Fernandina probably gets the coldest waters from the Humboldt Current. So it's very nutrient rich. So the stuff you see snorkeling Fernandina and on Isabela, I would say both islands, is just incredible. And one of the coolest animals, at least for me in the Galapagos, is the marine iguana, which is a relative of the regular green land iguanas. Like if you think of an iguana, you know, the big green reptile, you know, with the spikes in the back. Probably the ancestor of the Galapagos marine iguana was that. It floated on a log to the islands. There was no vegetation because these islands were volcanic. So the only green thing it could find was sea algae. And when the tide was high, you know, it had to dive a little bit to eat. And all of a sudden, it had to learn to become an amazing swimmer to feed on the algae. And because they're cold-blooded, the ones that were darker in color would survive better. So from green, they turned to black now. They're all black. Their tails flattened because their tails are used for propulsion. And these things, they swim like fish. They can dive for almost an hour to feed on the algae. It's the only marine iguana in the world. You get to snorkel with these animals and see these Godzilla-like creatures feeding on the water. And for me, that is probably one of the coolest things you can see in the Galapagos.
Wow. So is that the ideal place to snorkel? Or is there only snorkeling, no scuba? Or are there both? Or where's the best place for scuba?
The best place for scuba diving is Wolf and Darwin Islands on the very, very north of the archipelago. Now, those islands are strictly for scuba diving only. You can't disembark. So in Galapagos, you can do like day trips to scuba dive when staying at one of the port towns. But to go diving on Wolf and Darwin, you got to do a full week-long liveaboard dive cruise. So you can't dive on those islands on our cruises, which are naturalist expedition cruises. You need to take the dive liveaboard trips. And there you see, you know, the massive schools of hammerheads. And when I say massive, like 500 hammerheads, the whale sharks, you see orcas, you see wild dolphins, you see all these sort of things. I've been fortunate enough to actually do one of those cruises. And, you know, for a scuba diver, it is paradise.
I could talk about the wildlife and everything. Let's jump back onto the cruise, the ships or boats, or I don't know if do you call it a boat or a ship? Like, I guess if the ship goes down, you look for a boat.
Yeah, we refer to them as like expedition yachts or intimate ships. Doesn't really matter.
So tell us what life is working below the, I guess you don't work below the waves, but like, what's it like working on one of those? Has there been any people that's got unruly or maybe not late nighters?
Oh, there are some crazy stories. You know, there was woman taking some medication and she either left it back home, you know, forgot it to take it, or just left it back home on purpose. So you have passengers sometimes without any clothes going around these ships, and they're very small. So it's not like you see a person and you have no idea who that is. Like, you know exactly at breakfast who that was. those sort of things. It doesn't happen too often, but, you know, it has happened. But going back to your point of, you know, what life is like, it is really difficult to create cohesive teams. Just imagine, you know, on a large cruise ship, you have these people that are embarked for weeks and months at a time, right? And so in a small ship, you can't avoid somebody if you had an issue with them. Like say a crew member doesn't like another crew member, they just have to get along really well. That's why the leadership of a captain is, I think, even more important on one of these small ships, because you gotta have a tight crew that works really well with each other, that can resolve conflict easily, that they get along well, that they tolerate each other and work with complicated guests and smile, you know, every week.
Let's talk about the crew a little bit in detail. So how do you, well, what nationality? Do we have all nationalities? Or are you restricted to, like, what flag is the, are these ships?
Yeah, these ships, they have to have an Ecuadorian flag.
Do you have to have Ecuadorian crew? Okay.
Yes.
So only Ecuadorians.
The only position where you don't necessarily would be like a cruise director, but everything else, captain, you know, first officer, engineers, and the guys, they all need to be Ecuadorian.
And what's the cruise director do? Like, what's his job?
They're basically in charge of the hospitality side of the expedition. So everything that has to do with the guest experience, you know, from the food, you know, the cabins, the amenities, the briefings, like all that experience.
Like a hotel, like what we're used to calling a hotel manager.
Exactly.
Cruise director in our mind is the entertainment guy. He's introducing the shows.
I was like, what's he doing on there? Like just enjoying his time on there?
I didn't know that was what the cruise director did. So I can see now where we're confusing some cruisers when he comes out and introduces the
shows and the comedians and the entertainers and does, you know, speech of jokes and all this kind of stuff.
So these people out there thinking that they want a job working in the Galapagos Islands, unless they're Ecuadorian, they're probably out of luck.
Right. You would have to get a permit to work in Ecuador, which you can if you have a permanent residency. So you'd have to be at least a year in Ecuador. You can work on a ship.
Does your typical crew, do they do several years, or is it usually just for a short time and then they're off to something else?
Yeah, no, most of them is for several years, and mainly because it's a very well paid position for example, a cabin boy, the type of skills that a cabin boy needs to have around the world, you know, you don't have to have a university education and things like that. While in most places that would be considered like a low level position, in Galapagos, they're very well paid. And on our ships, at least, they almost double their salaries on tips. If they were somebody who does rooms at a hotel in the mainland, let's say they would make in Ecuador around maybe like $600, $700. In Galapagos, they can easily make, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 a month. And for a country like Ecuador, that's a lot.
And so passenger-wise, do you get mostly Americans?
Yes, but it's mainly because we target that market because, as I said before, it's the market we understand the best, mm-hmm. that understands our product the best. Our product is really designed for the American market, and our crew love Americans because they tip the best.
Right. And did you spend some time in the United States?
I did. I studied for 4 years.
Your accent is very good. You have
almost don't have an accent.
I would not know. I would not be able to tell where you were from. I would. Yeah, I'm pretty good with accents, but wouldn't know where you were from.
I studied in an American school back in Ecuador, and then I went to college in the U.S. for 4 years. And all the work that I do, I basically work in English. About 80% of my day is in English and only about 20% Spanish.
Where'd you go to school?
Very bilingual in that sense.
Where'd you go to university?
I went to the University of Notre Dame in South Bend.
Swanky.
Cool.
The Fighting Irish.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to get our mascots in too.
Now, on your on the cruise, the crew that works there, what's like a typical? Do you guys do like 6 month contracts, 2-3, you know, per cruise contract or a year contract, or what do they do?
Yeah, I was going to ask that and I forgot.
Yeah, no, these are basically what's the term in Spanish? It's indefinido, indefinite. So it's basically, you know, for as long as the crew member wishes to work at Quasar or Quasar wishes to employ. So it's Galapagos is not seasonal. It's year long. So our cruises are running 52 weeks of the year. There is a dry dock every 2 years, but the cruises never stop. So because it's not seasonal, the crew always has work, and we have basically two sets for every ship, where you're 5 weeks on and 2 weeks off.
Okay. Ooh, so
sweet.
So you can sign up and you're just there until you decide that's enough. Every 5 weeks, you get like a 2 week vacation.
You get 2 weeks off.
And then you're extra. So just to cover that person.
Exactly. And they're always rotating. So the team that you have on the ship, you're rarely like with the exact same crew. Like they're always changing, you know, human resources needs to juggle with this stuff. But that's normally, you know, how it works.
Holy crap. Now that is that's a gig. 5 weeks and then 2 weeks and then 5 weeks.
Yeah, 5 weeks and 2 weeks. Whew, man, I mean, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Of course, you're not, you know, you were not flying around the world too, to, you know, after 2 weeks, but that makes a difference. But yeah, that's nice. That would make it really easy to keep people. That makes it really easy to keep people. You keep from burning people out, because when we were doing, you know, the 9 month contract thing pretty regular, that was tough, man. Hanging in there on a ship for 9 months, that's a tough gig. So 5 weeks, whoo, that's nice.
Yeah. Ours would be 6 months on, 8 weeks off, 6 months on, 8 weeks off.
Wow.
So at the end of at the end of your 6 months, like you couldn't wait to get off. And then when you got off, you know, maybe the last week or two of your vacation, you can't wait to get back on the ship.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but so now that you mentioned it, I was thinking, you know, these crew members, you know, by the fifth week they're on, that they're still smiling, you know, they're
how can you not be happy? Like,
yeah.
Wow.
And it also allows them, you know, to see their families more. Most of them have their families in the mainland. So that works out for everybody.
Now, did they get to bring any of their families on to visit, like a cruise or something?
No, unfortunately, no. So a lot of them do bring their families like to port. So like if they're not from the Galapagos, you know, they would visit them in Puerto Ayora. But yes, on these very small ships, there's no room for like anybody else.
Is there anything else you want to know about the crew, Scott? Because we need to probably start kind of wrapping this up. Let Fernando go.
Oh, yeah, we're a little long. I will say my last thing would be, what is
something? Don't ask him where's the weirdest place he's ever done it on the ship. Please don't ask him that.
let's go back to that. No, I'm just kidding. What would be the weirdest, I don't know, weirdest, wildest, bizarre, good, bad, ugly thing that's happened on a cruise?
I was, I think, like maybe 6 years old, and we had a radio room in the house. And obviously, you know, that thing would never go off like on a weekday. It was like a Sunday, right? And it was like, I remember hearing like, shh, quasar, like, so some, and my two parents were in that radio room like all of Sunday. And I didn't really understand what happened. Years later, they told me. So we used to have a sailboat, I believe like 8 people. And there were like 3 British couples and then 1 American couple or something like that. And they had brought in additional alcohol and they would be drinking a lot. And at one point, I think, you know, it was a new guy that we were working with, and he started, you know, like flirting with the one of the ladies, and it was mainly the lady with him. And apparently like the husband was just like very drunk and just didn't notice that they somehow slipped into one of the cabins. But he sort of like, you know, realizes that this is happening, chases this guy, you know, obviously like goes into the cabin, sees this, that the guy is, you know, naked. He jumps out of the, basically like the porthole, and jumps into one of the Zodiacs, because the guy wanted to like really kill him, jumps into the Zodiac. And this is like 2 p.m., all right? Jumps into the Zodiac naked and then just like pushes out so that, you know, he could turn on the outboard and go away. And the outboard had been, you know, it was on maintenance on the ship. So there's this guide floating on one of the Zodiacs in the middle of a busy bay, completely naked for hours. And the passenger would not let him on board. So my parents were there for hours, basically in that radio room. They told me, talking to the passenger to let the guide on board, to convince him, you know, would let him disembark. But it was, this guide was like the laugh of the town, you can imagine, in Puerto Llorca. Everybody heard this story. Everybody had photos of the guy just like sitting on his Zodiac with no clothes on.
Did he make the calendar, the Galapagos calendar?
Yeah, almost. And so these are the stories. This happened like Quasar was established in 86. This happened in 87. It was like the sort of things that as my parents were starting to run the business, they, after that cruise, guides until today, they're not allowed to drink with the passengers. And it was as a result of that. So, you know, you live and you learn, and they, but that story, you know, it will, anybody that has been around in Galapagos for a long time knows the guide. Story. He's still guiding, actually. and I hope he doesn't listen to this.
Well, we need That's to have right. him. Nobody we need to have him this. On the story. Tell that story.
Okay. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. But tell us, really kind of wrap it up for us about Quasar, you know, give us your best spiel and let people, listen to what it's all
this
about.
This is your self-promotion spot. And yeah. Go.
We are an intimate ship cruise company in the Galapagos Islands. We specialize in expedition cruising. We do Galapagos differently from most outfitters on the island. We actually call our cruises safari-style yacht adventures and not cruises, because essentially what people do on our ships is they're on a floating safari where they're going from point A to point B, exploring these wonderful places, looking at all of this wildlife under the guidance of probably the best and most professional guides in the islands. I'm sure you know, a good guide can make the difference between a good and a truly exceptional trip of a lifetime. And that's what we do, exploring these majestic islands with a ton of activities, a ton of expertise. Quasar is upscale, so these would be considered luxury cruises where every need is taken care of. They're all inclusive. And we've done this since 1986. So we've been able to perfect this recipe for the last 38 years and show you a side of Galapagos that few people get to see. So if you're, you know, somebody who's interested in traveling to the Galapagos, you know, look us up, quasarex.com. Quasar is Quasarex.com, EX for expeditions. So quasarex.com, that's our handle for social media as well. If you want to follow us on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. But yeah, that's
TikTok?
How you can find
any,
us.
Any TikTok?
No TikTok yet. We're exploring, but our demographics, we cater to a slightly older audience that's not too much on TikTok.
Well, that it sounds wonderful. I mean, it sounds so
amazing.
Nice. Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you staying up late for us. And finally got you on here, and it's been worth it. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Hey, let me ask you, what's the most famous person that we would know that's been on an expedition?
Probably Sylvester Stallone.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, the Tulsa King.
A while ago, but yeah, a lot of celebrities in Galapagos. Huh. DiCaprio is in Galapagos quite a bit because he's so big on conservation.
Yeah,
I
was actually just in a movie with both of those.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Fernando. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Welcome, Brad and Scott. Thanks so much for having me. This has been entertaining.
All righty.
Take care,
Have
guys.
A good night.
Thanks.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
That was a good one.
That was good. Eric is going to be so mad that he missed this.
And once people hear this, everybody is like me. It's just going to be dying to go to the Galapagos.
Oh my gosh.
Hey everyone, the ship is about to set sail, which brings us to an end for today. We hope that you enjoy the podcast. For bonus audio, and if you would like to see this podcast in video, please visit our YouTube channel, My Ship Story. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram as My Ship Story. Don't forget to let us know if you're a past or present crew member, and if you have a story that you would like to tell, or if you like, you can email us your story for us to read on the air. Email us at myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. That's myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. Goodbye for now, and be sure to tune in next week, same time, as we'll have a new podcast every Monday. Bon voyage!